Leprechauns and
Somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Can we use that?
No. No. We cannot use that. Yeah. What have you got?
What if I said leprechauns and
No.
Still can't use it.
Still can't use that.
Is it the word?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it then, huh?
Can we use that? Can we use that?
It's more so thematically, I don't know if it
fits the
if it fits.
Okay, let's try something else.
No, I'm using that and just bleeping out the word. Okay. Hello and welcome to episode 377 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia.
You sound hungover.
That's what happens when you don't drink very often, and then you drink a lot, and then you wake up early to podcast.
Early being 9 a.m.
Well, I had to get up like 15 minutes ago.
That's true. No, I do hear you. I do hear you. You're at a party. Just let everyone know you're at a party or something.
It was a 40th birthday, like a surprise party.
Uh-huh.
For a university buddy back
surprised,
in the day where
surprised I was young, there's some vodka.
When I was young and a little bit more vibrant. So you kind of have to every, I don't know, 15 years rehash one of those nights.
And if you haven't seen those people, you can't come in there just teetotaling. You have to be like, yeah, I'm still party man.
No, I don't have to do that. I don't have to put on any disguises. I think I'm okay with not being that guy, but mm-hmm. You can flip the switch for one night and pay for it badly the next morning.
Indeed.
Yeah. So here I am. Hey.
Podcasting.
Yeah.
Good times. Aspirin. Is it aspirin or ibuprofen that you take the next morning?
I try to take neither, but ibuprofen. Mm. Ibuprofen used to be the go-to for me.
Same here, but I used to buy mine on Amazon, and if you do, click through our site and help us out.
Hooray.
Can you buy Advil on Amazon?
I don't know. I feel like pharmaceuticals might be off limits, but maybe nothing is now.
Not in America.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I like yourself, I do not take the analgesics and pretty much at all. Like I'll say I'm down to probably two ibuprofen a year.
That's pretty good. I'm more than that, but I really, for this, I deserve to be punished for what I did last night. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I specifically in those situations, I don't just go hair the dog. So that's always the best way to go. All right. What's going on, Adam? Spring break is upon us.
Yeah. That's
well,
it. It's nice. Beautiful here.
It yeah, as you'll see in my photo challenge, it did not get nice until literally 3 hours ago.
Okay.
At which point it's been -4, -5 all week in spring, past the spring, not the solstice. What's the, what do you call it? The equinox, the vernal equinox.
Are your kids, like, is it a spring break, a thing in Germany where your kids are off school and all that?
They are. Yes, they are.
Okay.
All There's right. two spring breaks. This is one of them. And so the next 2 weeks, they got off. Tomorrow's their first day off. Okay. When you're listening to this, today is their first day off.
Okay.
If you're keeping track of my kids' party schedule, that's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which you aren't. But it's been unbelievably horrible. And like minus, you know, we had our season opening baseball tournament, preseason baseball tournament exhibition deal was mm-hmm. last Saturday. It was canceled because it was -16 and then the snow came.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So it just got shut down entirely, which meant it was a road trip. It was supposed to be a road trip for the boys and that got canceled too. So no team bonding, no hangover though.
That's good. Yeah. There's the upside.
There was ice skating early the next morning. As we stayed home, we had a little fellow's night, went bowling and whatnot. That's not true. We went to the bowling alley and didn't bowl because it was jammed.
Well, that story took a turn for the
worse. Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we almost went bowling.
Yeah, we watched other people bowl. You know, so that was exciting. Played some pool. Point being, it's been ridiculous. And the whole week, -5. And then today, bam, I don't know what it hit, like 14. But 14 feels like 30 when that happens. And so I may have a sunburn.
Okay.
I fell asleep on the back patio with no shirt on today.
Nice.
So we'll see. Skin feels it, though, like in a good way. I got my vitamin D today for the season. So I'm set. So there you go. That's what spring break is looking like over here.
Cool.
Reminder, monthly challenge for March is Dutch Angle. But that show will be a week late. Instead of, you'd think it'd be April the 2nd, but because we record it, et cetera, we want to let everybody have the entire month of March to get that done. So that will actually be April the 9th. That one's going to air.
So there's no excuses.
Oh, plenty of excuses. Yeah.
Okay. There's a week's more worth of excuses.
Exactly. So that'll happen on April the 9th. We'll talk about that. Hashtag that, Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, or hashtag Hey Hosers.
Okay.
Did you shoot anything interesting? Let me go first because I did not.
Okay.
Not specifically. Not specifically anything interesting. Nothing I will discuss. I went through my photos, a lot of them, and was like, well, no, none of these are actually worth talking about. Besides the overarching storyline of I've actually been shooting photos again.
Oh, that's good.
So I've shot a whole lot of stuff. Unfortunately, all of it disinteresting.
Right.
Uninteresting.
Sure.
Boring. Langweilig. Anyways, I'm shooting a lot more.
Well, that's good, right? Eventually, there'll be something interesting.
Yeah, monkeys will get Shakespeare out eventually. Hey.
Yeah.
Anybody get a new black background?
Yeah, that's this guy.
All right, let's hear about that. You pulled the trigger on it.
Yeah, I just bought like the super cheap, like I didn't know how much I was going to use it or not, so didn't want to put in a big investment, and just bought like a $25, not the 10-foot wide version, just like the whatever 6-foot, 5-foot, whatever it is, the one on Amazon, cheap, $25, and it's pretty thin. Like it's like I think the one that you mentioned that you had, like you can see if you put it up against a window, there's definitely light coming through it,
right?
But for using it indoor and just knocking out other light, it's perfect for what I want to do, which is just have the option of being able to shoot some, you know, cool different black background shots, kind of like having the white paper roll, but so much easier to set up, so much easier to light.
You can't take that white paper roll and put it under your pillow.
Right. Yeah. This just folds up and throw it in a bag and it's out of the way. Like it is from a, yeah, for the space conscious homeowner, it is a very handy little tool. And again, the fact that it's all wrinkled and all that does not matter, as you'll see when you look at just a couple of sample photos that I put in for people to see. Two very completely different shots. One, I did a social media picture of my wife. She said, oh, I want a new social media pic. And I thought, perfect, black background. And so I used a couple of lights for that photo in behind her. Like I used my big studio strobe with the grid on it, sort of behind her at one side. And then I used a snooted flash on the other side to create kind of nice hair light. And then I just used our softbox, the mini, or not the mini one, but the medium-sized softbox with the grid on it, the cheetah stand one, and then an umbrella just to bounce a bit of light back on her because I didn't feel like having four lights. So I just used a white umbrella with my kid holding it camera left to bounce some light back from that. And then, boom. And the only reason I did it that way with the big studio flash in behind is because I don't have a grid on my massive softbox, and it is handier to be able to keep all of the light off of the black background when you're doing this kind of shot.
Yes.
So Very easy to do. And once I did it once, I was able to reproduce the setup in about, 10, 12 minutes. So the setting up the black background is so much faster than a white paper roll. I love that so much. And I can do it myself. I don't need an extra set of hands or anything to do that. And then the other photo I put in as a sample was my son's birthday the other day. And so I said to my wife, no word of a lie, I'm going to do this shot in 5 minutes. And she laughed at me and taunted me and said, it always takes you way longer than you think. And I said, no, 5 minutes. The stand with the black background took me about 2.5 minutes. And I said, how am I doing on the time? And she said, just under 3 minutes. And then I handed her the LED light and basically just put it over in front of him and had the light feathering in front of him so that none of it hits the black background that's maybe 2-3 feet behind him. Mm-hmm. And voila, done, under 5 minutes. Easy birthday shot. Because I hate all the, background clutter that I have in my living room for a shot like this. I just want the kid and the candlelight and the cake, or in this case, the chocolate-covered marshmallows.
Mm-hmm. Right. I read that he went for the chocolate-covered marshmallows.
Yeah, and if his shirt wasn't black, it probably would be even a little bit better, but you can still, even with the light, still see the separation between his sweatshirt that's black and the background. But mm-hmm. I was, in my boasting of my under 5 minutes for this, I was not going to get him to change his wardrobe.
No. Yeah. It also looks like part birthday, part seance, so it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like
yeah.
He's trying to talk to Houdini.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, no, in a good way. Yeah. That wasn't meant as a bad thing.
No, I like it. Yeah, it's a good reference, yeah.
The black background is great for that. And in fact, when I bought mine came as like a two-pack. It was one black, one white for like $30 or something like that. I forget now. It was a while ago. And I figured for that, I'll throw it in. We'll figure out. Maybe I'll use the white. Maybe I won't. And I actually do every now and then. It's not the full. It's not the full size one. Like I much prefer the paper. Literally on paper, the paper one is better.
Right.
But in a pinch, if you just want to quickly throw something up, it is much faster to do. And in this case, like you're not really using a black background. The black background here is an absence of background.
Right. Exactly.
So mine is also wrinkled. I've had it for 3 years now. Never ironed it. Probably not going to get around to it.
Yeah, I don't really see the need.
No.
For a totally different lighting situation, maybe if I was going to light the background and make like kind of a cool gradient or something then. But no, I just prefer to just have, like you say, an absence of background. That's the point for me to use this.
Yeah. Yep. Keep it clean. And I think, if I were to get serious into shooting black background, like some of the, like what's his name in the book that we have, he has a giant, very expensive piece of velvet that he hangs up.
Right.
What's the book we have? Greg Heisler.
Heisler, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a couple shots in there where he basically, like our background will just kind of, it'll mask all the clutter in the other background. And if you light it properly, you won't get any light hitting it. It'll just fall off to black quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you take this, if you actually take this image, like let's say probably the one of your son, pick one, or the one of your wife, and take it into Lightroom, take the raw file in and just crank up the shadows and the exposure all the way to the right. Like the picture will look terrible,
mm-hmm.
but you will see details in the background.
Yeah.
They do exist. Whereas, and which you're not going to do, so who cares? But if you're going to shoot the black velvet, that literally just actually sucks light out of the image.
Yeah.
So, but I guess what I'm saying is we're not good enough for that to matter.
Yeah, and I don't need a. I'm gonna guess because I looked. You're gonna spend at least $100, $150, $200 on this piece of fabric.
Yeah, they're like expensive.
There's nothing really on Amazon that was in that. It was either crazy expensive or crazy cheap. I didn't see that middle ground. I was looking for the $60 version of something that was phenomenally better than what I bought, and I could not find it.
no, I think ultimately what, you know, you probably just spend $40, buy two of the black ones and hang them up back to back.
That's true, yeah.
And they'll just cut all the light. But I'm not letting it from behind. I think I have. I think you can. That's kind of the fun part with the black one. You can put a flash in behind. It'll shine through pretty easily, and you can create a cool gradient that way.
Oh, okay. And that won't show all the wrinkles in the fabric?
Sure it will. You're going to have to iron that. There's no free lunch here, Adam.
Yeah.
You know, but it depends. If you're shooting that, like, you know, if you got enough room that you can put it back and put it at f/1.8 and put it out of focus, then you're not gonna really see those wrinkles. You're just gonna see a cool gradient.
And I think the takeaway for me is that, and probably other photographies that are similar to me in terms of what they do, and it's kind of a casual, a little bit more than a casual hobby, but they're not making their living on photography. A $25 black background is a great tool to have in your bag for sure.
It is, but if you want to save even more money, you can go to the fabric store, buy it all, make it all yourself, and those are $23. So
yeah.
So for $2, just go ahead and pick one up. No,
exactly.
I thought about that. I was like, why would I spend $20? You know, come on. And then I looked at it and I was like, well, yeah, the fabric's going to cost me almost that.
Yeah,
and I have to sew it, which I can do. I'm a sewing master, but in that I don't typically sew my fingers to whatever I'm sewing. That's the level of master I am.
Right.
But also, the fabric store doesn't roll up to my my front porch the very next day.
That's true, yeah.
Amazon, however, they're in for that. So that's how that worked.
Yep.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about getting one, I would suggest it. It's a very low risk purchase. It is a very low risk. It's kind of in the realm of smoke machine in that, you know, you're not going to use it every day, a couple times a year. Maybe this one, the black background, probably a couple more times, but maybe in conjunction with the smoke machine, actually.
Yeah, I have that on my agenda for sure. I want to do it with the smoke machine.
Yeah, so coming up, but it's not the thing that you're going to use, you know, daily. But
no.
When you do need one, it sure is handy. And the kicker, here's my favorite part of this, the cloth background. Very easy to set up by yourself.
Yeah.
I typically set up the white background, the white paper roll by myself. That's kind of that's no fun to do.
No, I agree. That was the big reason why I will use this more than the white background, because the white background is a chore. Like the full 10-foot paper roll is a very big chore. And using a fabric background to pull it across, like the background set, is very, very easy. And I prefer to not have to call in the troops in order to get things set up.
I hear you. I agree. I never do call in the troops. I tend to just leave them out of it because they're going to gum up the works. So what I end up doing is putting it on and then kind of walking it up a little bit on this side, a little bit on that side. And it's like, what am I doing? Come on. I'm tired of this. So, all right, looks good. All right, photo challenge this week. Dominant color green. Now, this ties in with, I thought spring was coming. And so I thought, oh, what do we got coming up? We got St. Patty's Day. That's green.
Mm-hmm.
We got springtime. Guess what? That's green. So it's going to be nothing but green for the A-train over here.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't work out that way for me. So as you can see, I'll lead into that. I'll go first. My actual challenge is the wider one. I put two up there.
Okay. I'm just looking at the wider one. So it's like a plant poking through the snow.
Yeah, so that was my spring right there. That's the snow.
Right.
And so I had to find something green.
Is this your garden, or what are we looking at exactly?
It's my backyard.
Okay, it's your backyard. So is this grass?
That is some sort of a plant. I'm not a botanist.
Okay.
And so that plant was already planted when we moved in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not there. I had to go and pick it out of somewhere and stuff it in the snow for a photo.
Right.
Because that's the grass. That's the grass you see poking through the ratty stuff. But I was like, well, that's not green enough. I need something substantial. So I need whatever that is. So I picked some of it out, picked one of them out, and fired it, balanced it in the snow to become the green. But it's symbolizing spring breaking through the snow.
I got it. Yeah, I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I lit it. I had to light this because it was just kind of overcast and lousy. So through a CTO.
Gel, looks like. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, through a CTO, put the thing camera right, kind of camera right and behind the bit of whatever plant that is, and sort of raked it across. It had a slash. I think it was, there was a snood on that and everything. So I kind of raked it across. I wanted like as if the morning sunlight, the spring sunshine was starting to peek through and cutting through and leaving some shadows in the background.
Yeah, no, I think you accomplished it. I mean,
all right, good night.
Exactly. Like I think it's pretty good. All things considered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, going to the spring fair photo competition. Possibly.
I liked that you threw in the all things considered, because that's never actually a good thing. It's like you're setting up your buddy on a blind date or something. And how's your buddy? Is he good looking? All things considered, the horrific car accident and of course the adult onset acne. I mean, all things. Yeah, he's a handsome guy. Yeah.
Right.
Sure. Is she funny? All things considered.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're, would you say you're into racist humor?
Right.
All right. But just the reason I put both of them up is I shot the other one as well, the close-up.
Right.
And I thought, hey, I thought the close-up was a bit of a cop-out. I thought I wanted to show a little bit, I kind of like the framing on the top and the bottom from the rocky outcroppings of that area of the yard. And I mm-hmm. thought, and then so in my head originally, I thought, okay, I want just nothing but white and then the green thing. And then thought, no, maybe the up and down crop is the way to go. So I like the up and down crop, but compared to the close up in 10 seconds or less, which is the better photo?
I like the close up better.
Wrong.
Okay. Just my two cents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I asked for a reason.
Yeah.
Is there a reason or just because? Eh?
I just think there's a lot more going on in the other photo. And yeah. I find the little bits of grass sort of a bit off-putting in the photo that like the first photo. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're completely getting rid of that. So the focus is more on the plant or leaf. And I like the your attention, because of how quickly it goes out of focus, comes to the snow and the sparkle. And again, with the plant, there's a really nice contrast between the sparkly white snow and then the grass. And it's more of a photo to me, more interesting photo than mm-hmm. than the other one. Just it seems like it's too busy. Now, if you only showed me the first one, like I said, I thought it was fine. It's a solid photo of a plant poking through snow.
Mm-hmm. Either way, you're super jealous.
The other photo, though, I find it more interesting. I would look longer at it. And mm-hmm. yeah, if I was judging the spring fling photography contest, this would get a higher mark on my scorecard.
Okay.
Just still, all things considered, not a good mark.
All things considered.
Yeah.
Yes. ATC. That's good news. All right, let's have a look at yours.
Okay. Mine was the St. Patrick's theme, as you spoke to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And big surprise, black background.
The black background. Yeah, okay. This is the same lighting as your wife?
Yeah, this was done right back to back. I did this photo, and then my wife said, hey, can I grab a photo? Mm-hmm. For social media.
Oh,
so
I see.
It was basically, she saw what was going on. I showed her the test shot and she's like, hey, I want one too. So that's what happened there.
Mm-hmm. This is all fine. My one nitpick, and I noticed this right away. I'd like you to have had the hat on the other direction.
Oh, I don't know if it's just the dollar store hat. I don't know.
You understand, but you can look in the very front brim. It's where, it's where it ends.
Oh, yeah.
That's just,
He's a leprechaun that plays hard, my friend.
Oh, I understand that. No, I'm sure he's probably close personal friends with Sean Connery. I can't even think of the name of it. The little what was the name of that one?
Oh,
where he sings. He does the singing. He does the singing and the dancing with the leprechauns.
Yeah. I don't remember the name.
Darby O'Gill.
Is that what it is?
And the little people. Yeah. Darby O'Gill.
It's a deep pull.
Ever been more range than Darby O'Gill and James Bond?
Yeah, that's pretty big separation. Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. The end? No, we have a topic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So topic this week, I did an interview. Hey, this is the third week in a row with an interview. That's a new record, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. Not for counting.
Okay. I mean, yeah, not like, I mean, for like Marc Maron, obviously, not a record.
Right.
Probably beats that. But for us, it's having a guest on. Although the last one was a two-parter, so this is our second guest in a row. Long story short, I talked to a friend of mine, who's actually, he's the older brother of a friend of ours. And he does, he's one of these YouTube guys.
Okay.
Have you heard of the YouTube?
YouTubers?
The YouTubers. I was going to ask. Yeah. I didn't know YouTuber was a name, was the thing.
Sure.
But evidently, he does that. So he does a thing called he's responsible for something called the Young Actors Project. Which I don't know. Have your kids heard of this?
No.
Okay. Awesome. Now they're going to. A lot of kids have. He's got, I forget how many millions of views he has. We talk about it in the interview.
Okay.
But I was interested to see, you know, photographically, look how he started and you know, how he started shooting this and how what he's moved up with all the YouTube money coming in. And we talk about that. But we talk a lot about just how it got started, how he got started, and how it turned into the Young Actors Project on YouTube. So without further yammering from me, here's my interview with Rob Randall. All right, welcome to the show, Rob Randall.
Thanks, Al.
So as I mentioned earlier to the rest to Adam and the rest of the listeners, Rob and I go way, way back. I've been friends with your brother for approximately forever.
Mm-hmm.
And known you for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But the listeners don't, Rob. Not yet. They don't know you.
Well, they're going to find out soon.
We're going to find out right now. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about what is the Young Actors Project?
Well, the Young Actors Project, it started when my daughter said to me one year, "Hey, Dad, can you make a movie with me and my friends?" And she was 6 years old at the time. And I was working in the film business at the time as an assistant director, but it was kind of in a low part of the year. And so I had some time. And so I said, yeah, let's go make a little movie. We made a spoof of Little Red Riding Hood. And then when it was done, like I had no edit. I had a camcorder. It was a Hi8 camcorder. And I literally edited it while I was shooting it. We shot in continuity order and I just rewound the tape and taped over things. And when it was done, we had a little cute little Red Riding Hood movie. And after that, I thought, wow, this was kind of fun working with these kids. The kids loved it. I had fun. The parents were thrilled. And so after that, I decided to start running classes with young people, teaching them about acting, because that was sort of what I trained in going way back, and then had a bunch of experience in the movie industry in the in-between time. And so I started running some acting workshops where instead of putting on a play at the end, which is what you'd do in most typical acting workshops, we made a movie. And I put them out on YouTube initially just to allow the friends and family to share them. And then over the years, as I kept doing this, the movies actually started to catch on. And now the channel itself has grown incredibly. We're soon to hit 200 million views, and we'll probably have 1 million subscribers come this summer.
Okay, so to back up a little bit, just to go way back in Rob Randall time.
Yeah.
So you you said you're in the film industry. Now, I know that, but like for me, you were the first guy I knew who really really got in the film industry. But before that, so did you not go down to Los Angeles to go to film school?
When I finished high school, when I finished high school, I wanted to be an actor. So I moved to L.A. I went to an acting school for 2 years, the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And when I finished there, I realized that I also wanted to be a writer. And so I moved back to Vancouver, went to university for a year, hated it because I had no time to actually write. So I wound up dropping half my classes. I finished a couple of them. And then I moved back to LA for another 3 years. I went to film school and tried to make it as an actor and a writer, which was really very difficult thing to do when you don't have any industry contacts down there. And so that was difficult. I wound up getting a couple little gigs, but nothing meaningful to really launch a career.
So what year was that?
That was the early 90s.
So that
I first moved down to LA in 88 when I or 89 after I finished high school. And then in the early 90s was when I was toiling around there, you know, trying going to film school and trying to make it as a writer and an actor.
So at that time, I mean, aside from a little bit of, you know, maybe Danger Bay or some Canadian productions, and there was some stuff going on in Vancouver production wise, you know, maybe 21 Jump Street and the movie Stakeout,
well, no,
stuff like
it
that.
It was building. It was a great time. I came back in 94 and the first movie I got a job on was Jumanji with Robin Williams. And I was a production assistant and I worked about 20 days on that shoot. And then, you know, a bunch of crappy little TV movies and TV series. You know, but that...
Well, you worked on one of my favorite shows.
Happy Gilmore?
Okay. No.
Which one?
You were on Da Vinci's, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Da Vinci's Inquest. Yeah. Canadian TV series. Really well-made, low-budget TV show. Well-written, well-acted. It was just all about the story, the acting, and the writing, which is kind of what I do now... With my movies is they're so low budget, but it's just all about the writing and the acting.
Right. Yeah. So after that, while you're working there, you decided to make your own short film.
Yeah, back in 96.
And if I remember correctly, that was called The Love Charm.
Yep.
And that was...
I was very naive at the time.
Why were you naive? What was naive about that?
I did not know about, you know, important things of filmmaking, like how to block a scene as a director. You know, I knew about understanding actors, but I had very little knowledge of directing, you know, and working with cameras and setups and just blocking a scene.
And that's extra difficult at the time because you shot that on 16 mil.
Yeah, I shot on 16 mil. I had a lot of help. There wasn't too much activity going on in Vancouver at the time in terms of like independent, you know, low budget filmmaking because the digital revolution hadn't really taken over. If you wanted to make a film, you had to do it on 16 millimeter. You had to go literally buy thousands of dollars worth of film stock and rent a film camera and make sure you had a crew that understood how to use it. And so there wasn't a lot of activity going on there. And me working in the film industry, I had I had connections with crew members and I managed to pull some favors from some people who were willing to work on a film. Usually to do that, you know, you have to offer someone who's a, you know, a focus puller on a camera crew, an opportunity to be the camera operator or the director of photography. You got to sort of upgrade people to get them to work for free for you. So they get an opportunity to do something where they want to, you know, where they want to go. And anyhow, but that turned out good in a lot of ways. You know, we wound up getting accepted into the Montreal World Film Festival, and it won a Leo Award for Best Short Form Drama, and it won a Leo Award for Best Actress in a Short Form Drama, which went to a woman named Babs Chula.
Which, if you are know anything about, well, not just Canadian cinema, but cinema, she's kind of a Vancouver legend.
Yeah, she's not with us anymore, but she is a legend in Vancouver, the film industry, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I remember when you landed her, that was kind of a get for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And she did a great job, and it was a great learning experience working with her for sure.
And so that movie didn't work out so well for me, if you recall.
Oh, you were helping me out with like behind the scenes stuff or something?
Yeah,
like that?
That's about the time that I decided I was kind of considering I wanted to get into that industry as well. And I said, yeah, Rob, I'll come help you out. Just be kind of a gopher, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's the day I crashed my car.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if I ever told that story on the show, but and it wasn't in the show. I wasn't a stunt man. I was just going to get lunch for you guys. And ended up wrecking my car. And yeah, it was pretty scary. I was out of commission for the rest of the shoot, unfortunately. But I remember you had the big premiere. You had it at a bar downtown, which is no longer there, I don't think, in Vancouver.
Yeah, it was called Fred's Uptown Tavern.
And
I think.
Yeah, that's what it was. Do you remember who was at the premiere?
No.
I bumped into, I that was the night I met Duchovny.
Oh,
was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah, David Duchovny.
But at the time, he was just that guy from the X-Files.
Yeah.
He wasn't Duchovny yet. So remember, I wouldn't said hello to him, but he didn't seem to care.
Right.
Yeah. So that worked out well for you. But as you say, I mean, you say it was good and bad, but you must have learned an awful lot from that one experience.
Yeah, it certainly was a great learning experience in terms of filmmaking. That's for sure. But it's a different world now, you know. I look back on that.
Yeah, it's great to have cut your teeth on that. Mm-hmm. I've shot 16 mil. I'm glad I don't have to anymore. It's kind of fun. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. It is kind of fun to shoot. But
yeah, but to have to go process the film.
Yeah.
And all that. There's so much stuff. And it just blows my mind now that all that we did for that can now be captured on an SD card.
Right. But just one more question about that. Do you have any idea what your shooting ratio was on that show? What was the final runtime? About 20, 22 minutes or something like that?
Yeah. I can't remember how long it was. It was around 20 minutes or something like that.
I remember you had sort of pitched it as a potential pilot. That's why I remembered it being 20 around that time. Do you remember how much film you shot?
No, I can't remember. The film is still in my attic.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah, I still have all the old film reels in a box in the attic.
But I'm assuming, you know, based on the cost, that you shot pretty tight. Which, you know, to our listener means if you're a Hollywood movie, you can shoot and shoot and shoot. They have a lot of money, or even now they shoot digital. But when they're shooting film, you just, you know, you'd hold the roll and just shoot and shoot and shoot and work it out later. But when you shoot on an independent budget, you better get it right. You got one take. You're not going to shoot a lot of coverage if you don't have
to. You can't waste it. Like now, if I, you know, now we'll just keep it rolling and hope maybe some bloopers will come out of this, you know, but then no, you get just like, you can't waste the film. That's cost a lot of money.
Okay. So you worked a number of years, and you and I worked on a film. I did a behind the scenes, so like one of those making of DVD features, behind the scenes features on a movie that you were on. Yeah. It's kind of how I got on. You told the director, hey, I know a guy, and came out, and I had a great experience on that. I mean, I think you were first AD on that show.
Yeah.
And so just getting to see how everything worked and how everybody did their job and on independent film, it was one of my favorite experiences. And so you did a number, you did a lot of that, but I guess you got to the point where you didn't want to work in that industry anymore. The way I, I heard it.
No, it's not that I didn't want to work in the industry. You know, the industry just went through a lot of ups and downs. And it was, you know, during one of those down years that I wound up starting the Young Actors Project, and it was working for me, and I was enjoying it, and I was managing to make enough money to pay the bills, so I stuck with it.
Okay,
and so I decided I wasn't going to go back to trying to work as a first AD after that.
Right. I mean, the hours are crazy.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, it's inconsistent when you work. You're just working like crazy. You're working, you know, 14, 15 hours a day. And then suddenly you're unemployed and you're not working at all. And you don't know when the next job is coming. It might come next week. It might come next month or a couple months down the line. You don't know.
Okay, so you start the Young Actors Project, as you mentioned. Was about... What year was that?
2009-ish, maybe 2008, 2009, something like that.
There must have been some sort of rumblings beforehand, because I remember you got in touch with me. I was still living in Vancouver, and you said, hey, you know, Alan, I'm thinking of doing this. Do you want to come out and shoot and edit these things for me? And that would have been at the very beginning, your first one. And I said, you know, it sounds good, but... You know, like it's pretty time intensive for me to get all the way out to where you are. I wasn't able to do it. And so you ended up picking up a camera and doing it yourself.
Yeah, I learned by doing it, which was the greatest way to learn. I remember learning how to use Final Cut Pro just through, you know, I shot a movie, I had to edit it. So I wound up doing some like online tutorials on how to use Final Cut Pro. And just while I was editing, if I ran into a problem, I'd just like switch over to a tutorial, search up my problem and figure it out and then apply it.
That's kind of the way to do it now. There's a lot of good info out there, and you know, that or podcasts, for example. You go and shoot the first one. What was the first one? What was it called? Do you remember?
Okay. So it was called The Detention.
Okay.
I made one called The Detention. It was about these kids stuck in detention after school and they're not allowed to leave until someone confesses to, I can't remember what crime it was now. So yeah, anyhow.
Okay, so you shoot that, and that how long does that typically take to shoot one of these shows?
That one, you know, I'd had an acting workshop with these kids, and then at the end of the acting workshop, we put the film together, and that, like, I had no lighting, you know, all I had was a camcorder and a tripod back then, and so that probably would have taken me two or three classes to shoot that. It was just like a, you know, 10 or 11 minute movie.
But part of the reason to do this is to teach the kids acting, for like acting in general or acting for the movies.
Well, the workshops were about acting in general, and then we applied that to acting in the movie. So they learned about, you know, what goes into, you know, film acting techniques and how you have to, you know, be consistent when you're going from shot to shot, from one person's close up to the other person's close up, and just the various techniques involved that are different than being on a stage where, it, you know, it doesn't really matter from night to night if you make little variations in your performance.
Mm-hmm. And if you hit your mark on stage, that's great, but it's not that important.
Yeah.
Whereas you better hit your mark on a film.
Yeah.
Okay. So you start, you get the initial one comes out, The Detention, and you get a good reaction to that?
No. Well, the parents liked it.
The parents liked it.
Yeah, the parents liked it. It was great. It was great in that regard. We had a premiere in my house in the living room.
Okay.
You know, the parents all came over, and that was it. This was like 2008 or 2009. right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, this was before, you know, YouTube really existed as some kind of, you know, business. It was just a sharing platform back then.
Right.
So.
Okay, so you get the first one, but then you expand. Then you do it again. What happens the next time out? And how do you go from doing one and showing it in your living room to where you are now?
Okay, well, I needed a better camera. I actually approached a local bank and I said, hey, do you guys offer any grants for artists, blah, blah, blah. And it actually turned out that my local bank, Scotiabank, little plug here for them because they were nice. They had the movie Twilight filming at their location in Port Moody. And Twilight gave them as a location fee $1,500. And they decided to give me that $1,500.
For asking.
Just for asking. And they said, you don't have to, we don't care that you're actually a corporation and not a not profit or anything like that. We just have this $1,500 sitting here. We don't know what to do with it. And I happened to walk in the door with this, you know, ask. And so they were very kind and they just gave it to me. And I put that towards buying a better camera. And so that allowed me to upgrade. So my next film turned out a little better. I wound up making a movie called 13, which I made in 2010. And it was about a girl trying to fit in middle school. And that one did really well. I mean, not initially. We put it on YouTube and it sat there for several years and just got, you know, a handful of views every day, but it's almost at 40 million views now.
40 million. But the whole YouTube angle, you know, it was, you didn't have that in mind where you thought, okay, we're going to.
No, God, no, God, no. I had no thought of ever, you know, being a YouTuber or making a business or career out of this at the time. I was literally just looking for a way to share the video with family and friends
without having to burn DVDs.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Because that's how you did it before, right?
Oh, yes.
You burn DVDs and then you might sell them and $20 a DVD, you know, to this family or that family. And then in the end, you know, you made $100 or something, or you made your money back on how much it cost to burn them or something, you know.
So this thing starts. So what was the camera for $1,500? Do you remember what camera that was?
Oh, well, the $1,500 didn't cover the total cost. It was a JVC GY-HM100U. So I think that's exactly what it was. I still have it. Mm-hmm. I don't use it, but it was a HD. It shot 1080p, I believe, and had a lot of functions that I didn't even know how to use. But literally when I made 13, I had that camera and I had a tripod. It had a little professional audio input with a onboard mounted microphone on it. So it had a semi pro microphone on it.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, you know, I had a tripod and a camcorder to make 13.
And so from there, now people start watching and you start doing more and more of these.
Mm-hmm.
What happens next? What's the next step in growing the Young Actors Project?
I wasn't looking at growing it. I was just looking at continuing it, you know, because after that, I made another movie and we got like a boom pole next, you know, and mm-hmm. and a proper microphone. So I made another movie called Wonderland High the next year with a lot of the same cast that was in 13. And, you know, it got a little bit more advanced. We incorporated some interesting musical elements into it and stuff like that. But, you know, it was just about the storytelling. I was just looking to write some good stories that kids would relate to. So Wonderland High was basically Alice in Wonderland, but set in a high school.
Mm-hmm.
So kids kids like that one. That one's a popular one. It never went as viral as 13, but it's still a popular movie.
And so all the scripts come from you?
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, that's what I wanted to do initially in my career, was to write and act. And I kind of said, okay, well, I can get over being an actor. I don't need to be an actor. But, the desire to write was always with me, desire to tell stories. And so, I had this opportunity to work with this, you know, group of kids and teenagers, and decided, well, I'm going to write stories for them that will star them. And, before I did Yap, I wrote movies about people in their 20s or 30s or mysteries or, stuff like that. But, you know, you work with what you got. And I decided, I'm going to write stories for these people. And it's still storytelling. It's been very fulfilling.
And so of all the actors that you've had, have any gone on to big projects?
Well, the first one that got noticed was a guy named Nick Percha, and he was in my movie 13 and Wonderland High. And when we had, every year I have like a big screen showing of these movies. I just rent the local theater and we put them on the big screen there. And so when I made 13, I invited a couple agents out, and one of the agents came out and he noticed Nick and decided and asked, to represent him. And then Nick went on to star in some TV shows and some TV movies, and did very well for himself as a young actor. Then a few other of the kids wound up getting agents. None of them really took off like Nick did. Although I had one girl who did really well. Her name is Caden Magnuson, and I think she's probably about 12 now, but I actually discovered her when I was teaching, because another part of the Young Actors Project is we would go into elementary schools and we would give acting workshops right in kids' classrooms during the school. And that's like a whole other thing. We teach like we give like workshops to about 30,000 kids a year with this educational program that we have. But I was in a grade 2 class in Surrey, which is a suburb of Vancouver. And there was a little girl in the class who was, she just had everything. She was very expressive. She took my direction like a pro, and she had like a really cute look. So she was really marketable. And then, and I never do this, but after the workshop, I said to the teacher, I said, "Hey, you know what? Can you like, please tell that girl's mom that she's good at this?" And so the teacher did. And next thing you know, the mom contacted me, and she'd already gotten the girl an agent. And the girl had, on her second audition, she landed a huge role for like an NBC miniseries or TV series, where she was like in 7 episodes playing the president's daughter. And she was like this girl that was possessed and everything. And she had this huge role. And then after that, she appeared in a couple other TV movies, TV series. She's still acting, but I put her in one of my short films, and she won a couple awards for it, along with the girl that played a teenager in it. That film was really good. It's called Letter to My Future Self. You can go watch it on my YouTube channel and see that little girl. That film played on CBC television as well.
Oh, really? On CBC?
Yeah, it was part of a TV show called Short Film Face Off, where they invite filmmakers from across the country to bring their short films and kind of compete for a cash prize. And so I was invited out. We've got flown out to Halifax to be part of this show. And it was fun. So that film got aired on CBC for that.
And so now as this has grown and grown and grown, you updated the camera again. And what do you currently shoot with?
Okay, well, I've been through a few. So I upgraded to DSLRs eventually, and I went to the Canon 70D. And I chose that one because it has some great filmmaking capabilities in it, in that it has this touchscreen autofocus. Mm-hmm. So one of the big issues with DSLRs, I guess, when they were first being utilized was, you know, you'd get the shallow depth of field to give it a cinematic look, but it was hard to keep things in focus.
Right.
But the 70D had a touchscreen autofocus. If you wanted to focus on one character, you touch the character's face on the screen. If you wanted to shift the focus to another character, touch that character's face, and it would just shift like automatically like that. So it's very useful, especially for someone like me who operates as kind of a one-man band film crew. You know, I don't have a focus puller camera system. Mm-hmm. But so anyhow, so I used that and I quite liked it. Then I wound up upgrading to when the Canon 5D Mark IV came out, I bought that, and that works in the same way, but it's just a larger sensor camera and, you know, higher quality. But then what I shoot with now is the Canon C200. So it's a real cinema camera.
Oh, you've gone right up to the C200.
Yeah. The success of the YouTube channel allowed me to make some good investments in my equipment. So I decided, what the hell, let's just get a really good camera here.
That is a great camera. I don't have that much time on it myself. I've worked on a few movies mm-hmm. with that. And the C300 actually, but very similar mm-hmm. camera. And how do you deal with focus on the C200?
Well, it's the same way. It's got a touchscreen autofocus.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I don't believe the C300 has that. So that's been most of my experience. And so what do you use for a lens?
I have two lenses. The main lens I use is the 70-200 Canon 2.8 version 2. If I need to go wider, I got the 24-70 2.8.
And for audio, how do you handle the audio?
Okay, well, with the C200, it's got audio inputs. It's got two XLR audio inputs built into it. Mm-hmm. So generally I use that, and I've got a Rode NTG3 mic, and I also have a couple wireless lavs that I can also just plug straight into my camera. Mm-hmm. and they link up. So occasionally I'll go wireless, but usually I'll just go wired on a boom.
So no more sync issues. That was the big issue.
Yeah.
It's always been the issue with the DSLRs is having to sync it later.
Yeah. Well, I used to use the Zoom H4N with mm-hmm. my other DSLRs, and then I'd have an audio file and I'd have a video file, and I'd have to, sync them up. So it was a little time consuming in post.
And how do you do your post now?
How do I do it? Well, I just take the SD card out of the camera, stick it in my my computer. I'm working off of a MacBook Pro, and I'm gonna probably upgrade to a Mac Pro. There's an iMac Pro, which I've decided not to go for, but I'm probably gonna get a Mac Pro. I think they're gonna come out with another one within a year and upgrade to that. And but just Final Cut Pro still, which is nice and easy to use.
The Final Cut Pro X, the 10, whatever it's called.
Yeah, the latest one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very user friendly, and it's got a lot of third parties that create things for it. You know, whether it be audio filters that you can plug into it. You know, sometimes if I'm in a school and there's like a fan or something or whatever, you know, that I can't get rid of on location, there's like audio filters that Final Cut Pro can utilize to eliminate stuff like that. You know, the other editing programs have that capability as well.
Mm-hmm. And so from there, right out onto YouTube and off to 800 and some odd subscribers that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way that happened is, you know, like my movie 13 really fueled that. Like over the years, you know, a few years ago, 13 started to catch on. And I think it, you know, a lot of it started, a lot of school teachers showed it to their classes and stuff like that. And then the students would go and watch it and share it with their friends, I think. And then it kind of bumped my channel up to a couple hundred thousand subscribers. Last year, the movies that are super viral now are the Girl Without a Phone movies that I made this mm-hmm. last year. So we've made four of them now. And collectively, I think they have over 75 million views. The first one really blew my mind when the first one came out because it had 10 million views in its first week.
Wow.
And then that changed my life, changed my channel, took it to another level and allowed me to now dedicate, you know, pretty much all of my time to just making the movies by having that success happen.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, Rob. Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
And we're back.
Yes.
That is how the Young Actors Project came about right there.
Very interesting.
It is. I mean, especially the accidental part, you know, like that to me is when I it doesn't happen all the time, but eventually, like every once in a while, I'll have a client or a potential client basically outline to me that, yeah, we would like to make a viral video. So let's make a viral video.
Let's do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a viral video. Okay. You know, and so you can, you know, by listening to Rob, you can find out what really goes into an overnight success. It's a number of years.
Right.
You know, it's very rare that a YouTube video just goes viral overnight and you start hammering checks. But, you know, so he's been working hard at it. But funny story that I didn't get into on the interview. I was debating. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. So I've known Rob, like I said, for a long time. I worked on a movie with him, as I mentioned in the interview, where I shot the behind-the-scenes documentary for the making of the movie.
Okay.
And if you go onto the DVD, which you're probably not gonna find, it's a movie called Pressure that was shot like a long time ago. A guy from Dawson's Creek was in it. A Vancouver actor who's like easily the funniest person I've ever met in my life.
Not James Vanderbeek?
No, he was not the Dawson Creek. It was the other guy. One of the other guys.
Pacey.
No, not that one. No.
A guy that I don't know.
Probably. If you don't know, it's not one of the top, one of those guys. He was on the show forever. So whatever. Point is, he was in it. Nice guy. Nice enough guy. And then the other guy, Vancouver actor, who's been in a lot of stuff. He's the guy, you know, like you look at and you think, oh man, that guy, he's that. So his name is Lachlan Monroe. Very funny guy. Good actor. Big fan of his. Anyway, so it was them in the show. It was a very low budget movie. And the producer who was on set all the time, he was humorless for one, and also not super interested in spending a lot of money.
Okay.
And so typically when you work on movies like this, they'll have production t-shirts or jackets or something that they'll give the entire crew, basically mm-hmm. saying, hey, you know, I worked on Pressure, for example.
Right.
And he was like, no, they're having a rap party, but there'll be no swag for anybody. And okay. like for like the week, I remember hearing people talking to him like, oh no, come on. I don't want to say his name. Did I say his name? I didn't say his name.
I think you did.
Did I?
Lachlan something?
Oh, not him. He was the actor.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the producer now.
Okay.
And so anyway.
So you lost me.
Yeah, okay. No, Lachlan, great guy. And nothing to do with this at all, except for he was in the movie. So anyway, yeah. So the producer, he's like all week, he's just like, no, we're not getting t-shirts. And someone's like, come on, man, you gotta get t-shirts. So finally he relents. I mean, one of the other guys, this is key to the story, one of the other guys in the movie was an older actor who just passed away about a month ago, I think, a guy named Donnelly Rhodes, Vancouver actor, been in a lot of stuff, was in a show called Danger Bay, for example, which sure. you may have seen. Also, Da Vinci's Inquest.
Okay.
Which ties in, which we mentioned again. Rob worked on the first season of Da Vinci's Inquest, and Donnelly Rhodes also one of the stars of Da Vinci's Inquest. Check it out if you can find it. It's on YouTube, I believe. Anyways, so we're at the wrap party, and the producer finally relents, and he actually went and got t-shirts. Pretty much the cheapest t-shirts that you could possibly buy. And in the left corner with essentially what looked like felt pen was just like, it just said pressure on right. it. Nothing else. It was like just a simple gray t-shirt, not pressure, not movie, nothing. It was just, that was it. Just that one word. And you could see the look on the whole crew was there having dinner, and they pull him out and they're looking at him, and just the look on their face was like, what am I looking at here? And the producer just sitting right there standing. And me being the jerk, I pick up mine, read the room, and I look and I turn mine around and say, hey, mine says Da Vinci's Inquest on the back. Yeah. So I was blacklisted in Hollywood North after that.
That went over well, right?
He was unthrilled. I think he stormed out and he wanted me to leave his party. I showed him though, I stayed.
Right.
And never worked on another film of his again.
High fived a few of the grips and the crew.
Oh, I got a big laugh out of that was one of my all time big laughs. I got a huge laugh out of all the crew and the cast was there too. So it's totally worth
not the producer.
Nope, he was humorless.
Yeah,
totally worth it to make Lachlan Monroe laugh, though.
Okay,
so there you go. And that involved, and Rob Randall was there as well. That's what I'm getting at. Challenge for next week.
Yes,
white paper background.
Oh no!
Come on, let's get the black backgrounds out. You bought it. Let's get it out.
Okay, I know how to do things with it.
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it?
Right.
All right. Okay. And then I said, mine says Da Vinci's Inquest on the back. It's a punchline I use for like a lot of jokes now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times. Reminder, the monthly challenge is Dutch Angle. Hashtag that Two Hosers Monthly Challenge or hashtag Hey Hosers. And we'll check that out. Adam, websites, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtridge.com, the two of us at TwoHosers.com, where you can go find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.